Glenn, a lot of people out there are upset with the possibility that Jesus might have gotten married. Does that explain why the Vatican is also so upset?
I don't know. They have the right in their own religious belief to feel as they wish. I know I took my wife, she's Catholic, to the movie, and she enjoyed it immensely. She said it was in the top movie she'd ever seen in her life and felt inspired by it. In that respect, however, we have to remember that every nun in the world is believed to be the bride of Christ in a very literal sense of the word. I'm not exactly sure what the problem is. Either Christ can be married to all the nuns in the world but not Mary Magdalene. I don't understand that.
All right, let's take a quick poll just from you three. Lawrence Gardner, do you believe that Jesus got married?
Well, it's often said by those who would argue against it that he probably wasn't married because the New Testament Gospels don't say that he was. Other people would argue, well, by the same token, they don't say that he wasn't. In actual fact, one of the really interesting things about this is looking at marriage ritual from the time. And there are some very interesting documents that come out of Syria and northern Canaan, the land that became the Holy Land. And they actually lay down the ritual for what they call Messianic marriage ritual, and it's called the threshing floor ceremony. And in fact, this, right up until 1878, it used to be repeated every year, a sort of annual festival. And this is the way that it goes. The king sits at the table with his friends. The bride lays the table and kneels at his feet. She cries and weeps and wipes his feet with her hair. She anoints his feet and his head with the oil of spikenard. Now, if we look at the Song of Solomon in the Old Testament, we actually see this again written exactly like that as the bridal refrain from the Song of Solomon. If we move into the New Testament Gospels, this is exactly the scenario that is presented to us where Mary Magdalene anoints Jesus at Bethany. He's sitting at the table with his friends, she kneels at his feet, she cries, she anoints his feet with oil, spikenard, and anoints his head. So in actual fact, although it's said that there is no record in the New Testament that they were married, this, as far as I'm concerned, is not only a statement, it's a blatant statement of a ritual marriage messianic ceremony.
Lawrence Gardner says yes. How about you, William Henry?
I would go along with that. I think that when we look at the models upon which the Jesus and Mary Magdalene story are largely based, Isis and Osiris and some of the other savior gods and the divine couples that preceded them, there is always the hint of the marriage and the hierogamos, the sacred marriage between the two. And in fact, it's in part referenced in her very name. I mean, we talk about Mary Magdalene, but her name assuredly was not Mary. That simply means beloved. Her last name was not Magdalene, no more than Jesus Christ was a personal name. Jesus, of course, means Savior. Christos means anointed one. This is like calling a person Mr. President. These are titles that were held by these people. And when we examine these titles and the meaning behind them, it suggests that the sacred drama had to be enacted in order for them to be clearly identified as the upholders or the office holders of these titles.
So you're saying he was married or not?
Yes.
He was. How about you, Glenn Kimball?
Yes, he was.
Simple as that.
There you go.
You know, Glenn, you and I have gone way back. We've talked about a lot of different issues on this program before, and you've done a lot of homework in these areas. So let's all assume now, all three of you say that he did get married. You believe that in reality. Do we then believe, we'll start with you, Glenn, did he have offspring, children?
He most certainly did. Sir Lawrence would be probably one of the best to address this issue, but the child Sarah, or Sarah Kali. Kali is her Indian name from India. After the death of Christ, when the Joseph of Arimathea took the principal characters out of Judea to keep them safe.
Yeah.
He first went to Egypt, and apparently she went on to India with Jesus' little brother Thomas, and that's where she gets her name, the second name Kali, from is her Indian name, and that's one of the reasons why the Black Madonna is dressed in Indian clothing and not in traditional Palestinian clothing. But yes, Sarah Kali is most certainly one of the daughters of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. And then we go on to, there's mention of two other children, and I don't know, Jesus Justice, which is kind of an interesting name because we call James the brother of Christ James the Just, and we call his little brother Joseph the Just, and later in as he becomes one of the 70 apostles called by Jesus. And so this name Justice and Just seems to belong to the family of Christ. And then there are German manuscripts which talk about another son as well. Those things are very, very highly speculative. I don't know. It's a lot more secure to suggest that he at least had a daughter and her name was Sarah.
Do you take that same position, Lawrence?
More or less, except just to follow on from what William said. In fact, most of these names that are used in biblical terms are titular. And the name Sarah, in fact, I mentioned that in my Bloodline of the Holy Grail 10 years ago. Sarah was never a name in those times. It was actually a title, much like Mary meant beloved one. Sarah meant princess. And so she was a Sarah. Now, in fact, the records that I can find on it actually name the daughter Damaris, which is a Greek name, and in Hebrew it translates to Tamar, which is interesting because that's very much a family name, and it goes way back through the family, back to the time of David, and back to Judah and Tamar, who began the dynasty in long before in Old Testament times. In terms of descendants, you know, one can look at history from just about any point in time, but if we go back to the very beginning of Christian recorded history, there are some very interesting things that crop up. From the first century, in fact, we onwards, we get chroniclers such as Hegesippus of Judea, Africanus of Edessa, Eusebius of Caesarea, and these all record from different times and places more or less the same story, that from the Emperor Vespasian in the first century, which was just shortly after the crucifixion, then to Titus and then to Domitian, and we go on through the succession of emperors, that they each issued edicts that the descendant heirs of Christ should be hunted down and exterminated. Now, these are all recorded, and the records explain that although some were captured and executed and imprisoned, others were not. And I found this quite interesting because they use the word Despasini, which is an interesting word, Despasini. It actually means heirs of the Lord or those belonging to the Lord. And I checked it up with the Vatican just to find out what they felt that it meant. And they said as far as they were concerned, it meant those in the same bloodline as Jesus from his mother.